and gentlemen, welcome to Aiken City Council meeting on October 12th, 2009. I appreciate everyone being with us. Even you young folks there, we appreciate you being with us as well. And as we begin our meeting, if you would stand with us for our prayer and our Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Dear Lord, we praise your name for these opportunities when we can gather in your service. We ask that your guiding hand be with us tonight as we conduct the business of the people. All of this we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We're pleased to have Richard Pierce, our assistant city manager, up here with us tonight. Roger is out of town. And, you know, I was thinking, I don't recall a time when Roger has been out of town. He had a funeral in the family, extended member of the family, and so that's where he is. But I got to thinking about that, and I don't remember any time. But Richard, we're glad to have you with us here.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Mayor, we do actually have two deletions tonight. There was an item under new business under number one, which was approval of accommodations tax committee recommendations. I met with Lisa Hall from Parks, Recreation, and Tourism this afternoon and also spoke with Kim Abney, who's our finance department director. And after those conversations, it would be appropriate to remove that matter from the agenda tonight. We have some figures that we need to review concerning the paperwork that will be filed in Columbia to determine exactly if there will be any additional funds that need reappropriation. And then the other item was on the back of your agenda under petitions and requests, and there was a request for a horse trough grant. I received a phone call from Owen Clary, who filed in the original request, and he asked that we please remove that matter from the agenda tonight. It appears that the Celebrate Aiken Committee actually has a budget of approximately $1,000 that they committed to that project, and so Owen would care to meet with his board just to determine whether they truly need a grant, and if so, how much, and if so, what for? And then also I had an email from our city manager. Even though he may not physically be here, he's still working for the benefit of the city. The Cumbie Center requested that they be allowed to place 8 bows as part of their scavenger hunt and awareness walk. And I spoke with Chief Fromer about that, and I think they have a permit for the function that Chief Fromer has already approved. And based on the activities they did last year, these bows would, we believe, be placed between public safety and the courthouse as part of their awareness walk. So we would ask that that item be added.
Okay, and that's been done in the past, correct?
That is our understanding after I talked with Director Fromer today.
Right. Okay, we'll just add that under petitions and requests. That's okay. All right, anything else there on the agenda? If not, do we have a motion to approve the agenda as modified?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Under the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of September 28, 2009. Any discussion there? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the minutes of the regular meeting for September 28, 2009.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under old business, the first item, appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. Pierce, please.
Yes, we have several items for consideration tonight, Mayor. As you will see in your agenda packet, Councilman Dwyer has recommended the appointment of Derek Martin to the Recreation Commission. That new term would expire September 1 of 2011. Councilmember Clyburn has recommended the appointment of Robert Aaron to the Recreation Commission with his term to expire September 1, 2011. Councilmember Price has recommended appointment of John L. Wallace to the Recreation Commission with the term to expire September 1, 2011. And Councilmember Vauders has recommended the reappointment of Kay Shirley to the Park Commission. That term would expire December 1, 2011. And the reappointment of Dacre Stoker to the Environmental Committee with a term to expire December 31, 2011. And for council consideration tonight would be approval of these five appointments to these boards and commissions for city service.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
I need to amend my appointments. Mr. Stoker's appointment is just fine, and that can be up tonight. Mrs. Shirley has decided that she's served 8 years, and she would like to have someone else appointed. So I would like to suggest tonight, and I'll have the paperwork by the next meeting, I've asked Margaret Marion, who is has a master's in landscape architecture from the University of Virginia, and I think she would be a terrific member of the Parks Commission.
She would be.
And she said she would be delighted to do it. So if we could bring that up at the next meeting, I would appreciate it. And
sure.
Withdraw
sure.
the nomination of Kay Shirley.
Okay.
And maybe then the motion would just be as modified, not having Ms. Shirley's appointment.
Exactly.
Okay. Do we have a motion then and second?
So move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, yes. I would like to recommend for the next meeting
okay.
the reappointment of Charles Hogan to the General Aviation Commission.
Okay. Any others?
Yes, I have several, Mr. Mayor. With very great dismay, I had to contact Mr. Beasley, who's been on the Parks Commission for 37 years, and thank him for his many, many years of service. I think he's probably an initial member of that commission, but I'm going to appoint Mr. Al Snell as my representative to the Parks Commission.
Is that S-N-E-L-L?
S-N-E-L-L, and I have his form filled out that I'll give to Sarah. And I'd like to reappoint Marsha Rogers to the Environmental Committee,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Charles Herbst to the Design Review Board, and I'd like to nominate my appointee to the Housing Authority. We may need to discuss the date. They're typically five-year terms, so if that's the case, it would be expiring in 2014, and I'll have the paperwork at for the next meeting. I'd like to appoint Francis Farley to the
Francis
the
who
Farley F A R
Farley
L E Y.
Is that a C E S or C I S?
Francis.
Francis. And that's housing.
I've only got one more on the list, and that's Board of Zoning Appeals, and I'm yeah. working on that.
And I did not realize I had an appointment to the Design Review Board, and I'd like to renominate Lucy Knowles to serve again, please.
Okay. All right. I will come forward with mine next meeting. I apologize for being so delinquent here on mine. I have a number. I'll be the only one there with the number of them, I suppose. Okay. Very good. Item 2, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property on Linwood Drive. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Council will recall from our last meeting that Nick Kuhn was here regarding their application to be annexed into the city of Aiken. This is property at 134 Linwood Drive. This property is contiguous to the city limits of Aiken. And this is second reading for consideration of annexing 134 Linwood Drive into the city limits of Aiken and to be zoned RS-15.
Okay, sir. This is a second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move approval of an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property owned by Charlotte E. and Nicholas H. Kuhn III and located at 134 Linwood Drive and to zone the same residential single-family RS-15.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to approve the use of Lancaster Street for the Aiken Golf Club parking. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Council will recall from the first reading at our last meeting that we do have a petition to approve the installation of this parking lot down at the Aiken Golf Club for members of council that use that way to come downtown. The area is currently being used for a parking lot. It's fairly haphazard, and this design would actually have organized parking spaces here. It was approved on first reading. For City Council consideration tonight would be the second reading and approval of this petition.
Okay, so thank you. This is second reading public hearing also of this ordinance, and if there's anyone that would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we approve this on second reading, the use of Lancaster Street for Aiken Golf Club parking. And I'd like to say how grateful all of us in the neighborhood are to Jim McNair and all of his people for the improvements they've made to this golf course. And it's been a pleasure for everyone to enjoy the course, but it's been a valuable thing for our neighborhood to have that course fixed up.
Right. Thank you, Jane. That more
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
You're so right
I'll
about that.
Reverend.
Okay. Thank you, Reverend. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, and a new business. Jumping down to item 2, first reading of ordinance to refund water and sewer system bond. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you again, Mayor. Mr. LaDuke and I had the opportunity to meet with bond attorney Margaret Pope from Columbia, South Carolina, regarding our utility bonds and some potential savings to the city if we could actually refinance that bond debt. Kim Abney is here tonight from the Finance Department to introduce Ms. Pope to you and maybe provide some initial background information concerning this bond and the potential savings. Kim?
Good evening.
Good evening.
We have been working with Ms. Pope for over a month now looking at our 1997 bond issue, which will only have 5 payments left after December 1st. And the hopes are that we'll be able to save between $100,000 and $200,000 over the remaining 5-year life. Letters did go out last week to the banks, and we'll be waiting to get those interest rates back so that we can pinpoint exactly the savings. And when we come back on October 26th, we'll have definite dollar amounts to put with that, how much money we would save over the life of this refunding. So Margaret Pope is here from Pope Ziegler, and she'll answer any technical questions y'all may have.
Okay. Good evening, Margaret. Thank you. Yeah, and your husband for being with us and for spending some money in Aiken, as you mentioned to me earlier when you came in, and you're still going to eat afterwards, right?
I certainly am.
We're trying to get out early so that you can have a good dinner tonight.
Well, thank you very much. Kim did a great job of explaining, and Richard did also, of why I'm here. You issued bonds in 1997. At that time, interest rates were not bad. They were in the high 4s and low 5s. The interest rate on those bonds now ranges from 4.9 to 5.1. And as Kim said, there will be, after this December 1 payment, there will be 5 maturities with the final maturity in 2014. All this ordinance does is authorize the City Council to issue a refunding bond, which will be purchased by a bank, in order to save money. You would be swapping out the interest rates that I just outlined on the refunded bond 1997 bond issue, which range, as I said, from 4.9 to a little over 5 for a lower interest rate. What we did is we took the cost of issuance of getting this bond issue done, and we added that to the principal amount that you would borrow. So the outstanding principal amount on the 1997 bond issue is $4,170,000. So to pay for the fees of getting it done, we would borrow $4,195,000. So it would give you, once you then compare the interest and principal payments on the refunded, the outstanding, to the refunding bond, the one that we propose to do, it would give you a true cost of whether or not you're saving money. In my mind, you have to look at the cost of getting it done added to what is outstanding and then amortize that out at the lower interest rate. Otherwise, you're really not comparing apples and apples. So we were careful. That is exactly what we talked with Roger and Kim about. It was adding that to it because, after all, there is no way you would want to do this unless you were saving money. That is the only reason to do it. We decided to, with a timetable, to take bids on the 21st. It will be a competitive bid, awarding the bid to the bank that submits the lowest interest rate, so that on the 26th, we can bring you back, as Kim said, the actual dollar for dollar, and I will bring you a table to show you that you are. After you pay the cost of getting it done, you are saving this amount of interest each year. And then if it is interest sufficient, an amount that you wish to do that, then we would give second reading and proceed to closing. We would close December 1, and you may pay the principal and interest, well, the principal really, on the outstanding issue December 1 without penalty, and that is why we are waiting until that date to close. If we had to pay a penalty, it would increase the amount of money we have to borrow, diminish the savings we would receive. So it's sort of a wait and see, but I think it is very good that your city is looking at every possible way to save money, and that is all this is. I will be glad to walk you through the ordinance. It is really quite simple. The only part of it that I would direct your attention to is on page 4. And you will see there we have the way we would wish for the principal to mature. And as I said, that mirrors the way the principal matures on the 1997 bond issue, with a bit added in the years to pay the cost of issuance. And I will be more than happy to answer questions. But we will take the bids before we have second reading, so you would have an opportunity to look dollar for dollar, what are we saving down the way.
Very good.
The interest rates on these next several payments would vary between 3 and 5.1%. Is that what I understand?
They vary. The way these bonds were sold, which is quite common, you have a principal maturing in each year. And these were sold by an underwriter for resale in the secondary market. So the way they do those, they are allowed. They don't have to, but they are allowed to bid a different interest rate for each principal maturity. So, for example, in the year December 1, the maturity that occurs December 1, 2010, it is $415,000 presently. It bears interest at the rate of 4.9%. The next principal payment is December 1, 2011, and that principal payment bears interest at 5%. And in the secondary market, then those principal maturities are sold to individual purchasers, generally in multiples of denomination of 5,000. And so it makes it a more competitive situation if you have the underwriters allowed to bid a different rate on each maturity. Now, when we do this one, it is small, $4,190,000, and it's short. It matures in 2014. So, and because the municipal market is a little bit in disarray, which I'm sure y'all know, the best opportunity we have is to go to the banks. And the banks will hold it as what we call a portfolio loan. They will hold it in the bank, not for resale. And their tendency is to bid one interest rate, and each maturity will bear that same interest rate.
Thank you.
Sure.
Sounds like a good deal.
Okay, it sure does. Anytime we can save money, it's a good deal. Any other questions?
Margaret, I just wanted to clarify, too, while we have you here and presenting tonight. As you said, we will have a better idea once we get the bids back from the banks of the exact amount of the savings, and that would be before our second reading.
It is. Okay. We will take bids on the 21st, and City Council will. But let me make this caveat. You know, we can't have a meeting of City Council with several people there without it being at a duly authorized, noticed meeting. On the 21st, when we take the bids, we will need to tell the bank on that date whether it is the intention of City Council to go forward, because when they submit a bid, they generally want to know whether or not you want to move forward at that time. So if City Council would like to say, we believe we would, our indication is we don't want to move forward to second reading and take the bank's interest rate unless we have this level of savings, we probably should discuss that to some degree. Or if the mayor would want to poll the members or talk with folks about how much interest savings they want. This is the first opportunity you have had to really save a good bit of money on this, because December 1 of this year is the first time that we can prepay or redeem the 1997 bond issue without a penalty. And when you have to pay a penalty of 1 to 2 to 3%, it eats your savings up, because you're taking the bank out, or the purchaser of the bonds, earlier bonds, out early. And nobody likes that. But generally, after the first 10 years, you do have the ability to do that. But we will be taking bids on the 21st, because we wanted, Roger was very clear that he wanted us to be able to come back to City Council. If someone has a strong feeling about what level of savings they want to be sure and achieve, before we move to second reading, perhaps we could discuss that with Roger or with the mayor, because on the 21st, we will need to know if this is sufficient savings for the City Council.
Is it going to be sufficient to the banks, Margaret, if we would tell them on that date? Now, you're talking about October 21st?
21st.
If we were able to tell them that it was on the agenda for the 26th, is that a sufficient response to them?
Most of the banks do not hold bids but for about 48 hours.
I see.
If you want to take the bid on the date that you actually will be meeting, on the 26th, I can do that. The bid letters were sent out to 7 banks that I know bid on this, and I will be glad to move that date to the 26th. It's not going to affect the rate that much, and if you would feel more comfortable taking the bids on that date, we can certainly do that.
I think we need to find out what kind of authority we have to do what we need to do off cycle.
Well, you know, one thought here is talking to Gary, too. Any savings we get, I mean, it looks like it's going to be substantial. But any saving is good.
Sure.
I mean, if it's $1,000, $2,000, $100,000, $200,000.
But we
can't make a commitment. But I think if we can do it on the 26th, that would...
Okay.
We have things on the agenda that we sometimes take off, like this evening, and we take it off. If we knew on the 26th, before the meeting,
you would know the bids in the afternoon, so then the night of the 26th, we would actually have a determined amount of savings.
I think if the entire City Council would like to be involved in the determination if the savings are sufficient... Mayor, I can notify the banks we're going to be taking bids on the 26th.
That we can come to the meeting night, and you could let them know.
I can. That is not a problem. It really is not.
That sounds good.
We were giving a little bit of time between the two, but it really will be fine. We have given them so much notice. That's what really can hurt a sale is when you don't give the banks enough time to get a bid together. But we got out early, and they have been notified of this. And one of the reasons I was waiting, actually, to take the bid as long as I was is to be sure your audit was out long enough. And I know that's next on your agenda. The banks will be fine if we take the bid on the 26th. This is not a situation where we have to put a notice in the paper. State law lets us do this through negotiation, and we talked about it, and we decided the best way to do it was through a competitive but private sale, in that you notify every bank in your area that they are asked to place a bid. Let's just move that date to the 26th. I think that would be a very rational, good decision.
Well, that would clear it up, wouldn't it? That would make it.
I think that would be fine, and I can't imagine that Roger would care. I don't think he would. I mean, we would take bids at noon, and then on the 26th, do you meet in the evening as well?
Yeah.
Okay,
just,
that would work
like
out just
evening.
Fine.
That's it. Like
and we evening. Would notify the banks then the following morning. That would work out
okay.
Great.
How many banks do you anticipate bidding?
We sent out letters to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about seven banks. The banks that we see bidding on this paper the most are First Citizens, if you have a banking relationship with them. BB&T is always at the table. This is one of their kind of niche specialties. Bank of America has come back to the table. They were not bidding for a while. They are now back bidding. I certainly believe we will have those three banks. We also asked Regions to bid, Security Federal to bid. There's a bank, First Tennessee, that visited me about 2 weeks ago. They do not have an office in South Carolina, but they asked to be included. And then RBC is kind of in and out. Steve Roth at RBC, sometimes they did, sometimes not. It is a topsy-turvy time. You know, it used to be whenever we had a sale, you would have seven or eight bids every single time. It's just not that way today. You have a very strong A rating. It was reconfirmed in May of this year. So we were able to say that in the letter that we sent out to the bidders. We have already received quite a bit of questions, particularly those asking, we would like to see the audit before we send the bid in. So that will be available tomorrow morning, which will be great. It's coming at a great time. And I will move the actual receipt of the bids till the 26th. Richard, I appreciate your bringing that up, because that is the way it works. And if the city council wants to each look at that, that is certainly understandable, and we will take it that day, and then I don't have to tell the bank until the next day. But there's a lot of interest in this paper. I will tell you, in the last year, I've been to several of these kinds of bids, and BB&T has been the only one at the table. Right now, things are a little bit better, and I would anticipate we would get at least three bids, but don't let your feelings be hurt if you only get one, as long as that one bid is good. And we will certainly come telling you where the market is on that date, so you have some comparison for where you are vis-a-vis the general market. It's just a very unpredictable time.
Certainly. Just so we understand, the procedure here, on the 26th, you will get the bids. What time?
At noon.
Mm-hmm. And you will get them to
they are manager. Directed to be sent to Roger and to me, and he and I will confer by telephone.
Good.
And I will look at the rate. I'll look at the terms. Sometimes the banks have some terms in their bids that you don't expect. Not often, but sometimes. So I review those carefully. If there's anything that concerns me, I would certainly bring it to Roger's attention, and then we would discuss that at the city council meeting that night. And I will be here on the 26th. Absolutely.
Be here. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
And Tim and I will be talking several times before that and looking. We are not changing your principal payment schedule at all. You know, when people do refunding, sometimes they change the principal payment schedule all around. If you do that, you need to know you're doing that, and you can change the effect of the lower interest rate, because anytime you change that repayment schedule, you're going to either increase the interest you pay or you're going to decrease it. You know, if I took your maturity at 2014 and I decided, oh, well, let me just shove it all up and y'all pay this off in 2 years, I could show you a savings even if I increase the interest rate. So what you want to be sure of is that when you're doing a refunding, you are just simply replacing those principal payments with a lower interest rate. Now, you can change your, but you just need to know if that's what you're doing, that's what you're doing. We are not. We are leaving your principal payment schedule the same. So it's going to be an easy thing to say, okay, we left it outstanding, this would be our total interest we would pay. If we prepay it and refund it, this is what our interest will be, and you just take the difference between the two total interest. So it'll be a fairly easy calculation.
Very, very good. Okay, any questions?
I think Ms. Price might have had, I'm sorry.
I had a question, but I'm not sure if it was more of a legal question, but it's probably inappropriate to ask this question given the banking situation. Question was on what happens, again, given the industry and what's happened with banks. What happens if that bank folds? But that's a legal question. You would not care, because when we close the bond issue, as long as they are a bank, a viable bank on December 1, they're going to give us their money, and we're going to give them back the new bond. So if they go away after we close, we really don't care, because we're going to pay the principal and interest, and we would just pay to whomever the successor of that bank.
Okay. Yes. That's the great thing about getting a fixed interest rate. So many people went into variable rate debt, and the banks have gone away, and
right.
They're in trouble. Good question, but it would not affect you.
Okay, very good, Margaret. Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have a motion and a second on first reading here?
I'll so move that we proceed.
Okay.
Second, Mr.
Okay, very good. Any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Item 3, a first reading of an ordinance accepting fiscal year 2008-2009 audited financial statements. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. It's that time of year again. As council is aware, state law requires us to audit our finances each year and make a report to the state. And you probably saw in the recent email from the Municipal Association that the state has put certain cities on notice because they have failed to file their audits timely. Of course, that's never been an issue here at the city of Aiken, but for those cities, they're looking at loss of state funding because they haven't complied with state law. Kim Abney is here tonight to present to you Mrs. Lori Smith from Elliott Davis, who will talk about this year's audit. Kim?
Busy finance night. Y'all recognize Laurie, and this is the fifth year that Elliott Davis has performed our audit. And again, it's another unqualified opinion, which is a good audit for us. And I will mention, since we talked about this when we did the audit bid some months ago, while Laurie is still the partner, the field auditors, the staff that actually came and did our audit in the office, were entirely new. So we did get a fresh look by new people coming in. And you can tell when you have new people because they ask different questions. And it's always, you always feel like you've been more audited. But they did a great job. And Lori is here to discuss the results, and particularly, as we promised, the new OPEB disclosures. So,
okay.
Lars.
Thank you, Kim.
It's a pleasure to be here with y'all tonight. I know y'all have gotten, probably the end of last week, the annual financial statement audit, and it's a fairly lengthy document. We're going to go over some highlights tonight, and of course, we're always available to answer any questions, you know, at any point in time. If you have those arrive later, you can contact us email or 800 number. We, as Kim said, we did take the opportunity, while y'all are not required by law to rotate your audit firm, and even our SEC, our publicly traded companies, aren't really required to rotate their audit firm. Publicly traded companies are required to rotate the staff that are assigned within their audit every 5 years. So we do have some publicly traded clients that we do that, and we did take the opportunity this year to rotate your staff because I do think that is important, as Kim said, to get a fresh look. So we had a new manager on the job and a new staff member. Manager had a lot of experience in our governmental sector practice, and we're pleased to say that we did not have any issues come up during the course of this audit. And as always, we do look at your risk and as part of the planning process and alter the audit procedures and rotate some of those procedures as we develop the audit plan. First, I'm going to start off with some charts that you have in front of you. The first one is this government-wide revenue chart, and I know last year when I was here, we were asked a little bit about that pie chart and how does our funding source on a government-wide basis look over the past 5 years. And so this chart is an attempt to kind of show you or paint you that picture. You'll see by far, as we've done it, most of your revenues are in your charges for services, and you can see that trend has been for the past 5 years. The largest revenue source is charges for services. Now, when you say on a government-wide basis, what's in that number? That's really your water and sewer enterprise funds and also your general fund. The big numbers in there are your fire charges for services and your garbage collection fees. The good thing about this is your citizens are really paying for the cost of the services here that they're getting. So, and that is your largest revenue source for the county. Your second largest, of course, you'll see is your property tax, which is a lot further down this bar chart. Then you'll see your third largest is your business license, followed very closely by your capital project sales tax. You will note that capital project sales tax, that did not come into play until your year ended June 30, 2007. So you did not have a capital project sales tax in 06 and 05. Moving to your government-wide expenses, you have another chart that looks very similar. Of course, your water and sewer is the largest expense by far on a government-wide basis, followed by your public safety expenditures. Now, when we look at our governmental sector, whether it's a municipality or whether it's a county, public safety is consistently the largest expense within the governmental, general governmental activities. So your trend is the same as what we typically see in our governmental base. Followed third by your just general government expenditures. I'm going to move to some financial data highlights that has three pages. It looks like this. It's a good financial summary showing a lot of positive financial trends. If you'll look at a lot of these charts, you see, even though we've got 7 years presented in most of them, that there are no big dips or spikes. So what you're seeing is prudent consistency in the financial trends as far as the city. The first chart relates to your general fund cash and your short-term investments. And the second one relates to your total cash and investments on a government-wide basis. The thing to note here is that the city, even in weak economic times, has a very good liquidity position. Our general fund cash increased $2.7 million for the year ended June 30, 2009 versus the prior year. Okay. Our total cash and investments, which would be all our cash, all our governmental funds, special revenue funds, our debt service funds, our general fund, and our enterprise funds, total cash and investments decreased $700,000, which is a very small percentage in relation to total cash and investments at the end of the year, which totaled $26.3 million. During the course of the audit, we test for, are we invested in what we can invest that's authorized by law? And you are in compliance is what you're required to and what you're allowed to invest as far as your funds, your cash. And we also tested for collateralization. As you know, that FDIC insurance amount increased to $250,000 during the course of the year. So we had no problem with your deposits being adequately collateralized or safeguarded by the pledging of the bank securities over and above the $250,000 limit. The last chart on this first page talks about the general fund number of days of operating cash reserves. This is always important because what we're looking at here is your equity position. And what we like to see based upon the collections in a government is 3 to 6 months as an adequate equity position. And at the end of June 30, 2009, you were right at the 6 months, top end of the range that's recommended. So as far as your days of operating expenses in relation to your fund balance. Moving to the second page here, and this, we look also really at how did we do in relation on our general fund, our main operating fund, with what we intended as a budget. We budget and we pass an ordinance. How did we end up in relation to complying with that budget that we passed? For the year, our general fund budget versus actual revenues collected were 1% greater than budget, just a little better than what we budgeted, while our actual expenditures were 8% less than budgeted for the year. Very positive budget variances in a very hard economic time. And looking toward the very bottom, this chart gets very little, but it's got blue and maroon colors in it. We're looking here at your general fund revenues and expenses. What this says is, you know, our revenues and expenses are fairly flat for the general fund. For the year ended June 30, 2009, our revenues were about $800,000 over our expenses. In the prior year, the revenues were only about $100,000 over expenses. Very last page here, we're looking at our proprietary funds, which we have two. Our water and sewer is the larger of the two proprietary funds. And what we saw here is a decrease in our net assets in our water and sewer fund. And we're going to look at that a little bit more as we get into the financial audit. And I'm going to point out some issues that I think you need to look at there as far as that decrease in net assets compared to the prior year. Our storm fund, proprietary fund, the revenues exceeded the expenses by $200,000 for the year. Now, if you don't mind, I know we only have a brief amount of time tonight. I'm going to highlight a couple pages that I felt might be of interest to you in your audit report. The first thing that Kim mentioned is we did, as Elliott Davis, as your external independent audit firm, we did issue what we call an unqualified opinion, which is a clean opinion on the fair presentation of your financial statements, not only in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, but also in accordance with governmental accounting standards. And looking at the city on a government-wide basis, on page 13, you'll see what we call a statement of net assets. I'm going to point out some trends here for you. And that's page 13. What you'll see here is we ended the year right at total assets of over $150 million. Now, that's up about $7 million over the prior year. So our total assets increased $7 million or 6%. So, in looking at what makes up our assets and where a majority of our assets are, I remind you that your capital assets, this building, your land, your infrastructure, your equipment, make up about 78% of that total asset number. Large concentration in our capital assets. We do have a lengthy note in here, page 39 and 40, which shows what our beginning of the year was, what our additions for the year, what we bought, what we may have constructed, and also what we might have disposed of during the course of the year. We had additions for capital assets this year of about $11.7 million. So a lot of activity going on in improving the capital assets and adding there.
And what were they? What were the assets, $11 million?
There were a variety of projects, but I think y'all had a very big tennis complex, and you had some public service. You had
So buildings and facilities, in other words, vehicles, the new fire truck.
Yeah, there was a new ladder truck for your fire safety. We had a pistol range for your public safety for training. We can get you a listing of what makes up those, but not as much equipment, hard assets more so than you would see equipment.
Okay.
If you hang on a second. if you look at page 39, at the very top, summary of the changes, you can see how we had $8 million of construction in progress completed and transferred into use during the year. It's primarily in, you know, land and buildings and infrastructure. Equipment was only $2.2 million in addition, of that addition. Your second largest concentration of assets, of course, is in your cash and investments, and they are 17% of your total assets. So between your cash and investments and your capital assets, that's roughly a little over 95% of your total assets. Looking at liabilities for the year, our liabilities, total liabilities went up right at $1 million for the year. Now, we did not issue any new debt. I know y'all are talking about that tonight. The only debt we really have outstanding is what you're thinking about refunding, and that state revolving loan debt, so very low debt. You will see under that total liabilities on page 13, right above that total liability line, toward the bottom of the page, there's a new line this year, and it relates to the new accounting standard, GASB 45, that you implemented during the year, related to your other post-employment benefit liabilities. You'll see that is reflected there at $1,120,000 liability. We're going to look at some note disclosure in a minute. That goes on for several pages, but that is the new liability that y'all have been talking about for post-employment benefits. And looking at net assets, which is better known as your equity, the trend there, we ended the year at $139 million. That net assets increased 4.6% over the prior year, right at $6.2 million. Very, like I say, very positive financial trends in your balance sheet. As far as results of operation, I'm going to move you to page 20. This is your governmental funds, your general fund, your main operating fund, and some of your special revenue capital project funds reflected here. Some things to note when you get into the detail later in this report is our total governmental funds, our revenue actually decreased in our governmental funds from the prior year by about $550,000. The biggest driver there was in your interest rate. Interest earned, your rates being declining, we saw less investment income or interest income for the year. Expenses, you'll see for governmental funds were right at $33.8 million. They also decreased about $900,000, which was due to some, actions on your part in the weak economy to address some staffing and also address some capital outlay. If you looked at results, revenue less expenses for the year for the governmental funds, you'll see that our revenues exceeded our expenses by about $94,000. That's pretty flat when you're dealing with about $33.5 million. So very flat on our governmental funds as far as increase there in our fund balance. Looking at our other, our business type funds, if you'll move to page 23, this is the water and sewer fund. When we were looking at the graph a little earlier, I wanted to talk a little bit more in depth with you. Your water and sewer system enterprise fund on page 23 is reflecting an operating loss of about $1.1 million this year, compared to pretty much a break-even number last year. And looking at the audit, we were looking at what was driving some of this. The most significant thing you'll see in the revenue side is that your revenues for water were actually down about $630,000, about 5%. And you also had an increase in the expense side of about $319,000 that you're paying the Aiken County Public Service Authority. Those were kind of driving your numbers to a negative position for the year as far as that enterprise fund. And I would encourage you to kind of look at, you know, what your rate structure is and where you need to go with this fund in the future. The purpose of that enterprise fund is to, through your rates, whatever they are, is to cover the cost of providing that service. going to move you over to page 25 and 26. These are your fiduciary funds, and you do have a pension trust fund that is fairly significant in your audit. We began the year with assets of a little over $18 million. You'll see on page 26, due to the weakness in the economy and the adjustment of the assets to fair value, that we ended up with a reduction of about 12% in the market of those investments. So that fund actually ended the year right at $15.2 million. That was in line with what you would have expected with the equity position and the fixed income position of that fund. You also see on page 26 your post-retirement benefit trust fund. That's your irrevocable trust fund where your contributions related to your other post-employment benefit liabilities are being invested and the results shown there. That fund, you contributed $300,000 during the course of the year, and we ended up with about $786,000 at the end of the year invested for the other post-employment benefit.
Can you just explain what that depreciation and fair value is in a pension fund?
What that simply is, under the government accounting standards, you are required to mark your investments to fair value. At the course. So that is the decline in your equities and your bonds in that pension trust fund for the year.
Okay.
So we're marking them to market at the end of each audit period. Therefore, we had a $3.5 million net unrealized loss during the course of the year. I'm going to move you over to your new note. We did implement GASB 45, our other post-employment benefit standard. It starts on page 47, and this note goes for about four pages. It starts with really what your plan description is, your funding policies, goes into great detail there. Actually, the number of people in your plan that are covered. Page 49 actually gives you some numbers as it relates to your liability and your annual cost. If you see at the top of page 49, your annual OPEB cost and your obligation, your OPEB cost is really divided up into two things. Your normal cost, which is the cost to provide that benefit on an annual basis. And then you'll see an amortization of what they call your unfunded actuarial liability. Now, those two combined together to add to your annual required contribution right at $2,232,000. Now, that amortization of UAL is really your liability at the beginning of the year that you adopted this new standard. And you can see that down to the bottom of the page. That actuarial liability when you adopted the standard was a little over $20 million. Well, the standard says we're going to take that liability at adoption and we're going to spread it over 30 years. So that's that amortization component that's added to your annual cost to arrive at your annual required contribution. So that actual liability of $20 million is really not booked as a liability on your financial statements. When we looked at your balance sheet, your statement of net assets at the beginning, you remember that number was only like $1,120,000. That beginning liability will be recorded over the next 30 years. So it's not as big of an impact to you in the year of implementation. Now, of course, you used an actuary to actually come up with these numbers, and I will tell you that these numbers are what we call an accounting estimate. These numbers will change with time as you gather history, as you might modify your plan, and as your plan investments grow, hopefully, as to, you know, your funding. So this actuarial computations will need to be updated on probably every 3 years. Okay, looking over to page 52, we talked about general fund budget and actual and your positive budget variances. Page 52 gives you some detail by revenues and expenditures, budget versus actual, along with there's a lot of schedules starting on page 56 that go into a lot of detail, budget versus actual, both in the general fund revenue and expenses, and they go on for numerous pages. Moving to the very back, page 110 and 112, we issued two other audit opinions in conjunction with your annual audit. The first one on 110 is a report on internal control over financial reporting and compliance. This opinion, what we state is that we did not have any compliance issues with laws or regs during the course of the audit that we uncovered with our testing, and no things noted in internal controls over financial reporting that we say are significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. So we had no material weaknesses and no sufficient deficiencies. The second opinion in the back of your report on page 112 and 113 is your report on compliance related to your single audit. You did receive and expend more than $500,000 in federal funds during the course of this year and were required to have a single audit in addition to your annual financial statement audit. This last opinion is related to the audit of those federal funds. You'll see on page 114 those federal funds are listed. We tested the major program, which were the funds that were expended through the U.S. Department of Transportation grants that were given to you, and we had no problems uncovered during the audit with how you handled those funds and expended those funds. There will be a lot of, I know you all have heard about the stimulus package or the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. A lot of those funds began to be released in May of this year, and you will probably be receiving some of those during this current year. Those funds will need to be separately detailed on your schedule of federal expenditures next year for your audit. That's a brief summary of your basic financial statement audit. I know Kim and the staff will be working on some statistical tables to release the CAFR probably in the next month or month and a half, and we'll be working with them to review that and modify an opinion for them to be able to release that CAFR, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. The last thing I have for you, and I know this has taken a while, is what we call our SAS 114 report. This is a new report that we're required. Last year was the first year that it was required. It is a report that really doesn't have a lot of numbers in it, but is more of a required communication on what went on during the course of the audit. It's fairly boilerplate, kind of reminds you of our responsibility is to audit your financial statements, and they are your financial statements as management and elected officials. The during the course of audit, we did not have any disagreements with management or any concerns as far as journal entries. There were no uncorrected misstatements in the financial statements during the course of the audit. So we did not have any issues or difficulties encountered. They're in the appendix here. There are copies of our communication, our arrangement letter, our rep letter, and our internal control report. One of the things that we're required to do in this report, too, is to talk with you a little bit about new accounting standards that are coming your way. And I remember last year we talked a little bit about your other post-employment benefits. This year, if you look on page one of this report, you'll see there are three new standards, GASB 51, 53, and 54, that are coming your way. 51 and 53 are going to be applicable next year for your audit. They are related to intangible assets and derivative instruments. Don't see a lot of application for where you are for either one of those standards. We'll be working with Kim and her staff, but I don't think those are going to have any, not much of an impact for you. The last one, GASB 54, is 2 years out. Now, GASB 54 relates to your fund balances. We used to call our general fund balance reserved, unreserved, designated, undesignated. The terminology is going to change a little bit there with that new standard. We're going to be talking about, instead of designated, we're going to be talking about committed and uncommitted and assigned. And we've got some time to kind of get you some information out on that. But that's the one I see impacting you in the future, but will not be until the year ended June 30, 2011.
Laurie, in what way might it impact us? How would it impact us?
What you've got on your governmental fund balance sheet right now, you've got three areas. You've got reserved, designated, and unreserved. In the future, you'll have like five different fund balance classifications.
Oh, okay.
You'll still have your reserved, but those will be more external, by law reservation or by creditor reservation. You'll have your committed, which will be funds that you as a council decide internally by law to restrict somehow, and they will be called committed on a go-forward basis. So it's just the way we sort through those, how we kind of differentiate between was it an external, was it internal, or was it just something that we want to carry over for next year?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be kind of an assignment instead of a designation.
Yeah. So if you change during the mid-year sometime, you change from one to the other. Perhaps you don't do something here and it goes in another column.
Mm-hmm.
You just explain why you made that change. That's kind of what you're looking for.
Right. You know, the language now for that is a designation. In this new standard, it'll be an assigned fund balance.
Oh.
So we're changing some of the terminology, adding one more that says, okay, is it externally restricted or is it internally restricted? Fun stuff.
Right.
Any questions? I know that's a lot of information.
I noticed on the page 116 you indicated that we were determined to be a high-risk auditee.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what does that mean?
Okay, that's a great question. Okay, if you didn't have a single audit in the past year, you're automatically high risk. That means we test more than we... If you had had an audit, a single audit in the prior 2 years, and you hadn't had any findings, we don't have to test as your external auditor, but 25% of your expenditures. When you haven't had a single audit, and we weren't required to have one last year because we were underneath that $500,000 of expenditure of federal funds, so I automatically have to put you high risk, which means we have to test 50%.
That makes it cleaner, though, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, it's just to assure the federal agencies that, you know, if you hadn't had one before, that, you know, we test it a little bit deeper to make mm-hmm. sure that we don't have any issues.
Mm-hmm.
And you ended up with a clean single audit as
That's
far
good.
As your opinion. So
you tested 50%.
We tested 50% of your major federal expenditures.
On page 3 of the supplemental document that you gave us, you make the statement, and it's kind of general, and I guess I would ask you, do we have any litigation accruals that are significant?
No.
Can I assume that the way you phrased it is kind of very, very general?
Yeah, this page is to remind you that they are estimates out here. You do have, we did receive two attorney responses. You do have some small, very small stuff that are very immaterial.
Okay. And the other question that I get into last year, and I'll get into it this year, I guess, is the business tax program. What do you do for the business tax program? How can we assure business people in the city and our citizens that it's fairly administered and so forth? Do you get into detail to that, or
your business license
right? License program? Yes.
Yeah. What we required to do under the new risk sweep standards is we document what you're doing with various cycles or transactions. transactions within your entity, and we do what we call testing of those. Not only do you document an inquiry, but then we go and pull a sample and test is what we have been told going on, really going on. So we took a sample of your business licenses, and we tested those to make sure those were in accordance with your policy and your ordinance related to business license, and recalculated the fees by industries. And
Are you satisfied with our system for dealing with businesses that are not in the city? A business in the city has to show page one of the tax form. Mm-hmm. That's slam dunk. You know exactly what you're dealing with. But a business that's out of the city, it's just whatever they say it happens to be. And again, I'm asking the question from the element of fairness. Are you satisfied that whatever they're, I mean, I don't know how you could be satisfied or not satisfied. It's just a number that we have to accept. Is there any way of checking that number to make sure the program is fair?
Well, now we can only test what you've adopted as your business license. We test, okay, is that, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing with what you've set in place? So if you've said, I don't really require this, then we can't. Yeah.
Well, it's my understanding, and I think maybe Kim can help, but it's my understanding for a business strictly within a city, it's a slam dunk. They have to give us their tax form, and we can see exactly what it is. But for a business that is located out of the city but does business in the city, they just get away with telling us, and I guess without us having any ability to prove. So there seems to be, it's always been a concern of mine. The more I learn about the business tax, the more worried I get about its fairness. So I'm just interested in how we can measure that part of that program, because it's a lot of money. It's $2.1 million.
I would encourage you, when you're setting policy, like how you're going to deal with your business license, to kind of network with some other municipalities and how they're dealing with theirs, and kind of establish, you know, what you want to accomplish with that. And I would encourage you to, you know, to look at what similar cities are doing with their business licenses, not only within the but without, and what kind of information they're asking to be furnished.
And it may be helpful, Mr. Dewar, that Lex, and I know Al Coffin for many years participated in the state Business License Officials Association through the Municipal Association. Mm-hmm. So they do have that network, and constantly through a listserv share information literally daily.
Okay. Just a side comment, since the fiscal year has begun, we no longer get in our packets financial information to let council track how we're doing with the budget. It has nothing to do with the audit, but I think we ought to discuss it at a future meeting, maybe when Roger gets back. I know he was talking, was it at Horizons, we were talking about developing systems so that as council members we could monitor the budget and see how we were doing against what we had planned to do.
And I thought we were doing that as part of the website posting that has been recognized by the state as one of the first in the state to do so.
Well, that's the transparency issue. That's looking at the...
The reports you used to get are posted on the website. They're under monthly financial statements.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. So it's for all to see.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Lori, thank you so much. Appreciate all your work and your wonderful explanation here.
And, Mayor, of course, for consideration by council tonight would be first reading of the ordinance to approve the audited financial statements for the fiscal year 2008-2009.
Okay. Do we have a motion in a second?
Mayor, Lori has given a very detailed and very thorough report on the audit, and I want to thank her for that. And with that, I'd like to move that we approve this on first reading to with the city's fiscal year 2008-2009 audit financial statement.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? Anybody want to repeat everything she said?
I'll try.
If not, show hands of approval. Passes unanimously. Okay. Kim, thank you for your work and the work of your staff very much. It's great to have every year a good, clean audit, and we appreciate it. Council appreciates it very much.
And, Mayor, I'd like to publicly state, too, that certainly in this transition into this position, I have a lot of questions for the finance department. They're always very prompt, very thorough, and very accurate in their responses.
That's wonderful. Okay, we've got one item we added, and that would be the Cumbie.
Yes, ma'am, that is correct. There was a request from the Cumbie Center to assist abused persons, and as I stated at the top of the meeting, this is just a request by them to be able to install up to 8 pull bows, is how they described it, for their October 22nd scavenger hunt and awareness walk. And if council would like to condition that upon the Director of Public Safety just reviewing that, or his designee reviewing that to make sure the placement's proper and doesn't obstruct any traffic. I spoke with Director Fromer today, and that's certainly fine with him, and he nodded his head yes when I mentioned it again in the room. So, again, okay. It's just part of that function. The bow should not be in place longer than 24 hours.
Okay, very good. Do we have a motion and second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the request for CAP to place bows in downtown Aiken.
Okay, you want to add that?
With the consent and approval of the public safety director.
Okay, all right. Do we have a second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. That's it, I think.
That should be everything.
And we are adjourned.
What do I do with it?
It's about the county.